Hey, sweetie.
I'll pull it to you.
Oh, no.
You know, that's what it is. It's basketball. It's not a soft sport.
I'm going to be a man, and if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. This man just gave me a job. I'm not signing that shit.
There's a lot I got to say, but I ain't going to do it here because it's free today. I ain't going to curse.
There's levels. Yeah, you're perfect.
Not quite as bouncy as yours, but you could
not. That will do. Recording in progress. Keep your eye on that. I might even leave this bit in, people. So if you're welcome to the NBL Pocket Podcast. You've heard Andrew doing and I doing our checks. That's not just for... I don't know whatever reason, but it's not just for safety. We just lost the episode. We recorded for the best part of an hour, and we got to the end. We both agreed it was not only the best episode of this show, but any show. Andrew, am I right?
Oh, it was unbelievable, and I'm not even just saying that because there's no evidence that it wasn't.
We looked at each other.
It was so.
We locked eyes, and we said that was the best thing ever. I'm just not even kidding, and it's all gone. Oh, well, no, that's not true. My audio is recorded. Andrew's must have fallen through the cracks somehow. You couldn't believe it.
He's just thrown me under the bus. Just absolutely thrown Canyon under the bus.
No. I had a great... That reminds me of my intro for you. My intro for Andrew was... no, I can't even remember. Now it's something like...
Canyon...
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Joseph Gore here from Stats Before Media and other outlets, and I'm joined by... Actually, I'll pose a question first. Who can? Andrew Canyon. How are you? Welcome to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Before we get into anything, Buy a couple of Marvelous, Patreon, all that sort of stuff. It helps us buy the sophisticated equipment that has so deeply betrayed us right now. What are we going to do today? We've got Andrew Canyon again, not just in the past, but today as well. We're going to be talking about viewer fatigue, Andrew Bogut on owning the Kings, Paul Smith's comments on Perth Wildcats, the NBA kiss of death. We're going to be talking about the round summary and the commentary so far of the NBL Cup. Then we're going to do our tips. Then we're going to talk about each game. And we're not just going to talk about the results of each game or the stats. We're going to be talking about how that game is affecting the larger and longer storylines of the season. Andrew, have I recounted what we did pretty
that
well?
That is excellent. There's a lot to get through. We reckon it would take about an hour and 15 minutes to get through. I think this time we'll probably get it in about 45.
If the energy is more bitter, you know why, okay? be prepared. All right, Andrew Canyon, the cup. The crowds are lower. The crowds in stadium. Why do you suppose that is?
Well, the... Two games in one, I don't know, the pricing's cheap. You got two games. I guess maybe it's either a lack of appetite for teams that aren't Melbourne. So, the NBL is a league where fans follow a team, not the league. Or maybe it's hard to get to the venue for what is it, 5 o'clock? 5 o'clock start? Now, I've been to that venue once before. I caught an Uber and I remember getting stuck in traffic on the road in. Right, I don't know if that has a part to play in it. But
the other thing we talked about was pandemic fears, like maybe people just aren't going to these games. I think it's more just Australians don't go out midweek. It's very difficult on a Tuesday night to get revved up to go to anywhere, let alone NBL basketball.
Yeah. You're finishing work, you're trying to feed kids and you think, can we really be bothered doing this? Mm. But the good thing is I think John Cain Arena looks excellent on TV. Mm-hmm. The viewing angles, you don't notice it too much just in the play-by-play that it's empty. Maybe it's when a highlight event happens and you hear a smattering of applause, you sort of think, ooh, that's not how I would expect a highlight play to be celebrated. Mm-hmm.
What are you saying?
No, I think they're covering it or hiding it as well as they can. Mm. And the TV product is still fine, but...
Free throws. When a guy's taking a free throw behind him, you can see all the empty stands. That's where it does present itself a little bit. We were just saying how it's one thing is there's a little bit of viewer fatigue. I can only speak for myself. The NBL is normally a game that's played over the weekend, four, five, six games around tops or thereabouts. And it feels like they're really cramming in, like they're just cramming it down our throats. Is it too much? It's really hard to... And we talked about this, like the games are blurring one into the other. It's a lot to take in and perhaps too much.
Yeah, and if you're not a hardcore fan following it closely, you're sort of like, well, hang on, Cairns are playing again. Like, didn't I see them the other day? Who are they playing? Oh, the team wearing the white uniform. Oh, hang on, this team's wearing a white uniform. What's the difference? There's a bit of a lack of differentiation around how they're presenting the cup. And I think even on TV, their TV presentation is basically the same for each show. You know, they have an intro. Yep. They have the interview with the coach. They go into the game. Then at halftime, they have the Gatorade section. Like, it's just rinse and repeat with each of these shows. There's no way to know you're watching something different.
Yeah, exactly. And we were thinking, like, those written things on the screen, they need to be animated. So when a team like moves up in the cup, their name needs to slide. This sounds like really pedantic, but you're animating the motion. It's more of a story when you do it that way. And I think
it's like how the AFL do the live ladder, right?
Yep.
So you could almost do that with this, where the team wins a quarter, and I don't think they're making that very transparent as to who's actually won a point in a quarter. I would have thought they'd have a ladder, and you'd see like, oh look, you know, Brisbane have slid down because they lost that quarter or something like that. Mm. Make it a bit more engaging.
Yeah. So, I wanted to make one point. When I said like they're cramming in games, like there was a while there where I thought, is the NBL Cup a bit cynical where they've gone, we need to cram as much games. Like, we have a commitment to our sponsors to have 25 games and we're going to cram them all into like a couple of weeks and just overload of too much. I think it flirts with that, but I don't think this is not a cynical the NBL Cup.
No. We need to remember where it stemmed from. It was a COVID response tournament. With fears that this would be the only NBL we'd get to see through the whole season, you know, because who knew how it was going to play out. As it turns out, it's almost bonus basketball at this point, because it looks like the league's probably going to go on relatively unaffected, you would hope.
Bar New Zealand,
of course. But one of the things I think with the telecast as well that we're missing in all these games, they need to do some kind of like summary of the round. Here's a bang bang, what you've missed, what you need to know, who's playing well, who's not.
We were saying this, like a 3 to 4 minute video, 30 to 45 seconds on each game, and then quick flash to the table, how it changes things, move on to the next, bang, 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 you know, show the three major plays from the game and go that way. Yeah, that summary is definitely needed. Certainly round to round. Don't know how you do it mid round, but at the end of the round and going into the next, vital. Yeah.
And then I think the other thing I was thinking about is, how do you tell some player stories? They've got this unique advantage of having the whole league in one place at one time. Is there a way that you can grab hold of a few players and build a storyline around them? What's their experience of being in this tournament? How do they prepare? What's their recovery like? You know, behind the scenes, what's their mental state? I think you could really blow that up into something and get us to know the characters.
This is a departure from what we spoke about in the previous recording, but, you know, it's kind of like COVID in that way. Everyone's locked inside to stop COVID. Are there any other communicable diseases we could throw in as well? Like, while everyone's getting vaccinated against COVID, maybe we could give them a shot of, you know, chlamydia or something. Get rid of that too. Just a thought. I'm pulling chlamydia out of the sky. But exactly, like, you've got all these players under the one roof. You've got, you know, command over their schedules, because presumably they're not, you know, doing a great deal in Melbourne.
Yep.
It's a rare opportunity, and seize it and do the Matisse Thybulle thing. And we were saying how, you know, you've got Cotton in the one spot, but you've also got a DP in the spot. You've got a winning coach. You've got a losing coach. You've got all these players to juxtapose and contrast with one another. It's a rare opportunity, and as of yet, hasn't quite been taken advantage of.
It seems like there's just so, you can just see so much opportunity there, and I feel like you can only do so much, right? And the league has limited resources, but it does seem like an obvious one.
Yeah, we're talking video logs here. You could do a lot.
There's got to be a DP kid who does a YouTube video on the side and knows their way around. I mean, get Drimmick to do one. He does his Twitch stream.
We'll get Attic Ponya in the thing. Matthew Attic Ponya did the Foundation Club. Get him back.
Yeah.
Do that. Yeah.
It's a missed opportunity. Don't miss it, NBL.
Don't miss it. Let's move on. Bogut. Owning the Kings, or wanting to own the Kings, or perhaps owning the Kings. And we were talking about the Rogue Bogues podcast. You did that. We both listened. We'd fallen away with episodes where we hadn't really listened the last couple of weeks and then got reinterested in the show for this segment. I don't think either of us listened beyond the segment, but we did really enjoy this. What did you think about his demands for becoming an NBL owner?
I think he likes the idea of being an owner more than he likes the reality probably of being an owner, where you have to, there are rules to follow and approaches to take when you're in an ownership position. I don't think the ownership will come to fruition.
Nope, neither.
He enjoys taking pot shots too much to ever be a team player in the sense of a corporate team, I think, where you've got to, you know, have a position and just stick to it no matter what happens behind closed doors.
To relay for people what was said on the podcast, he basically said he was interested in becoming an owner, but he had a couple of conditions, and they were wasn't particularly fond of Larry Kesselman's conflict of interest. He owns the league. He also owns United and perhaps other teams as well. The decals, the uniforms with First Ever weren't up to standard, but now they've crossed to Champions, so I don't know whether that's relatable or that's changed underneath him. Public player salaries, we spoke about that. Difficult one, and then also
you got to stop saying we spoke about it. We didn't speak about it. That recording doesn't exist. This is all new. We are speaking about it for the first time.
Player pronunciations in commentary was another gripe of his, and I think that. I was about to say it again, but the issue I have with these demands are very player-centric, very hobbyist-centric. Because if you were looking at the NBL, and if your first concern of the NBL isn't getting on popular television, pay-free TV, and dragging in other people into the sports, and if you're sitting there thinking that, oh, the reason why people aren't watching the NBL like they should is because the rims aren't standardized. No one's thinking that. Your man on the street isn't thinking that. And that's where my gripe with Bogut's ideas and also the Sydney Kings in general, do they have a handle on what men and women and the man on the street of Sydney wants from their team? Bad uniforms are not what's stopping the league progressing. But, you know, that's where the mindset of Bogut and the team is a little bit, I think, a little bit off, because are you coming at it from a hobbyist or are you coming at it from a business perspective? Because if you're looking to make money off the NBL, the things that are stressed there are not of great concern. The decals being perhaps an exception.
Look, the decals are a legit issue. I saw a few more slips this weekend.
Brad Newley went down was the one I remember.
So it's definitely a problem. I don't care what you try and say to cover that one up. That is an issue. Maybe issues such as like standardized rims, sort of a bit of an oddball one to pick. I see where he's coming from, especially in the NBA where everything is standardized. Here in the NBL, I'd be satisfied just to have rims that are painted and don't have the chips and worn out.
Illawarra bad for that.
Yeah. And the Perth rims are that putrid orange that is just a horrible, horrible color. I don't know where they got that. They must have a special on at Bunnings for the disgusting orange paint.
The other thing I had found interesting about this was in the article with Andrew Webster of the Sydney Morning Herald, the big push on that article was that the social media policy or the muzzling, I think even the title of the article was Bogut Feels Muzzled by Larry Kesselman or something like that.
Yeah.
The fact that was such a big part of the article but not a huge part of Bogut's conversation on the podcast. I found that departure one from the other, maybe rightfully so, I don't know, but again, like when you talk about culture and, we're building something and, the idea that Bogut wouldn't be, willing to not sort of slag off the NBL on Twitter for the sake of, Paul Smith, like what kind of culture is there? If someone came to me and said, I'll give you $1 million, but you can't slag off people on Twitter, I'd probably do. I probably wouldn't have a Twitter account. It wouldn't bother me.
Yep.
So where's the interest. But yeah, it's again, the Kings have shown themselves to be a little bit player centric, a little bit insular in that way. And that came to the fore. Anything else? Or do you want to move on to Paul Smith's comments about
Let's talk about Paul Smith now. So he was published in the newspaper article, right? Sort of saying what again.
Matt Logue. Yep. So he's with the Herald, I think. I forget now, but no, the Age, I think. But essentially it was, Paul Smith, his comments were that the NBL 20 championship had been gifted to the Perth Wildcats. Yep. Andrew Canyon, your initial reaction?
Oh, it's like, here we go again, like Groundhog Day. Do we really have to drudge this up again? Like, how many times do you have an argument and you settle it and then you come up and bring the argument up again? It's like, if you're trying to create heat for a competition, I think there's better ways to go about it. It's a different yeah. season. It's a year ago. It's different players. Like, the decision was made. You're part of, talk about criticizing a league. The league made that decision.
Mm-hmm.
It was cast. Everybody's accepted it. Except for maybe Paul Smith. Let's move on.
This is what I've got. My first line: I'm not biting. You don't think he's earnest. I don't think he genuinely believes what he's saying. I think part of him wants to believe it, but more than anything, it's to stir up trouble. And I think, do you think he's being earnest?
No, he's a showman at heart, and really, he loves a bit of controversy, and I think he seeks it out. So. Nah, I don't think he's really really buying it too much. But I just think there's newer and more interesting ways you could go about it. I think let's talk about the battle between Casper Ware, coming for redemption from a bad playoff series last year, and he's out to get Cotton. You know, like, we've got
keep it on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and here's why I don't think Paul Smith has been particularly earnest with all this, because this call and this article went through Matt Logue. And typically the Sydney Kings, their sort of more nuanced articles go through Andrew Webster of the Sydney Morning Herald. This one seems like one where, like, I'll kind of plant a story. And so it's gone through Logue. Right. Not to say that Logue's a bad reporter, a bad writer. I'm the absolute opposite. I have the highest opinion of Matt Logue. But I just see the contrast in the two. One was a very serious article about the decision Casper Ware made and the health issues and the COVID finals withdrawal, and then the next one was Bogut muzzled, very serious articles, and then this Matt Logue one seemed like a bit more of a let's sell some tickets with some bad blood type stuff. And I do feel like Paul Smith would have picked up the call to Logue, given all the information, given the quotes, thank you very much, married to a Perth girl, or was, hang up, and then the call would have been immediately placed to Andrew Bogut with a giggle of like, oh, look what I've done. Check this out. Perth fans are going to be steamed. I'm wearing my funny shirt again. I think there would be that element to it. I think it's absurd. And Perth fans bit way too easily on this.
Oh, I know. Bless your hearts. It's the worst of, like, I'm a Perth fan from way back. I've got to admit that. But come on, Perth people, don't be so – don't. Mm. Don't give them what they want, you know?
And like, to clarify, I like Paul Smith. I like the strategy. It's, again, we talked, and you made a good point there, like, keep it on the floor. Like, again, you're deflecting, and we talk about Bogut's ownership as well. You're deflecting attention away from the core product.
Yep.
You're talking about the result, which was an NBL decision. It was about, it was about a meeting, about health and COVID. Keep it on the floor. There's more interesting stuff going on the floor. That decision of gifting the championship, that's an ownership story. That's a centric story that way. Man, make it about your players. And that's exactly what I'm talking about, where it's stop being so player-centric, be customer, be fan-centric. Because we want to hear about Cotton versus Casper Ware. We want to hear about Jarrell Martin's injury. We want to hear about, Adam Ford return to Perth, all that sort of stuff. That's what fans actually want to hear. And we want the bad blood between them. I don't really care what the bad blood in the boardroom. It's called cops. It's cops. It's on the street, not boardroom. Not exciting. Doesn't get the average man off the
sofa. How often do we hear commentary from the Perth Wildcats ownership about what's going on? Like Paul Smith's in the newspaper or having commentary every other day. We don't get
I don't hate, but make it on the court.
Yeah.
That, and also that was retroactive. Like, you've got a game coming up. That's what's important. Like, we're gonna play dirty on Cotton. That's exciting. I remember that decision made 18 months ago. I forgot what I had for breakfast. I don't care what happened 18 months ago. It's over or however long it was. But that's it. Anything else on Paul Smith?
We've given him enough time. Let's talk about something else.
I wanted to talk about this. The kiss of death of playing in the NBA. We've had Sloan gone, Orlando Johnson, and now kind of Deng Adel's been snake bit by this.
I think it's a little unfair to put Deng Adel in the same package as Sloan and Orlando Johnson. Come now, come on, mate. But Orlando Johnson. Look, if Brisbane haven't done it yet, I'm buying the plane ticket on their behalf.
We'll talk about that some more for sure. But that was just a little. There's not a great track record of guys with a bit of NBA heat who are in their early to mid 30s and have come over. It's not. It's starting to. Starting to become more of a rule than an exception at this point.
As those greater than us have said in the past, this is not a cupcake league.
Let's do our picks for next round. We'll do our picks for next round.
I don't do that as well as Homicide, do I? I don't have
no, he hits it. Don't be so hard on yourself. You're not bad. Let's do our picks for next round, and then we'll go into the round that was and the major talking points from that round.
Yeah.
But next round, here we Chips. Go. Sydney, New Zealand. Who you got?
Sydney, just don't even have to think about it. I'm not tipping New Zealand ever. where I'm at.
They don't play defense. They don't do a lot of things, but defense most among them. They're dead in the water, I think. We'll talk about this some more when we talk about the games. Adelaide, Melbourne.
I've got to say Melbourne. As much as Adelaide seem to be winning occasionally, I still don't understand how they are winning. It's it's a mystery to me.
Totally.
How do they do it?
You're to Melbourne then, I take it?
Yeah, Melbourne.
Yeah, so am I. The wheels on the bus are going to fall off. I don't know how Adelaide have held back this. I don't know how they've won games. I know they've played at home. They've played, Southeast Melbourne as they sort of put things together and a few other teams. Yeah, Brisbane quite a lot, but I think this is where we're going to see them start to topple. I know they just beat Southeast Melbourne in quite a dramatic fashion, but still, I'm not convinced of this team. We picked them to finish last, and I'm just waiting for the wheels to fall off. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. Maybe Humphreys can keep it afloat, but I don't.
There seems to be such a weird vibe with this team. I look at it, you hear them in interviews, and it seems like they're all like working together. You watch them on the court and they seem chippy with each other. Getting into it with Henry. Just seems a lot of animosity bubbling below the surface. And I think wins cover that once a few L's stack up. And I think that stuff comes to the surface.
Next game, because we're both picking Melbourne there, Brisbane and Illawarra.
Well, Illawarra Hawks are going to get this one. They've got scoring all over the court. How good is the backcourt of the Hawks? What are you calling that backcourt?
Yeah, Hooley put out this question. I went with combining the first name and last name of these two guys. You have obviously Tyler Harvey and Justinian Jessup. I went with Harsop. So I'm not proud of it, but it's an option.
Mine's not much better. It's not better, actually. It's not much. It isn't. I went with hawk droppings. There's nothing worse than when a bird poos on you. Dropping from three. Yeah.
I think I'm tipping Illawarra. I'm sure you are too.
Sure am.
And my simple reason is the Illawarra Hawks have the luxury, or not the luxury, but have the attention to actually play in the fourth quarter. And you can't take quarters off. Brisbane routinely just don't show up for the fourth.
Yeah.
And for that reason, the Hawks are going to win it. Cairns, Perth.
Perth Wildcats. Based on what I saw in their last game, I've got to go Perth Wildcats. And I just think that the Mooney influence on that Wildcats team was substantial. And I think who's he up against in Cairns on the front line? Maybe is it Cam Oliver that he matches up on? Interesting, but I think he will lead them to a win.
I think the opposite. I'm tipping Cairns I've been thrilled with Blanchfield, so therefore I think those wings, the patchy wings of the Taipans, Noi, previously Ding, who's now hurt, he's out for, I've just seen an update, he's out for weeks with an MCL strain, a month, I say, maybe more. So that's a bad loss, but I still think those, like Jerich, I think gets a little space from the likes of, Mitch Norton, he's quite a good defender, but I think Noi, he had a big game. I think Blanchfield, he gets off. I also think athleticism can trouble John Mooney. Don't forget John Mooney had this big game. Yeah, but it came against the Sydney Kings. We'll talk about the front line that showed up for the Kings with Jarrell Martin out. So I'm tipping Cairns. And Cairns have routinely played Perth pretty well. That's my guess. Adelaide and New Zealand.
Well, I said I wasn't going to tip New Zealand, and I'm not. I'm going to tip Adelaide.
I'm going the opposite way. I'm going the Breakers, and the dot point I've got here is who guards Lamar Patterson? He's too big for Crocker. You know, Giddy's not going to take him. Will
he play well? I mean, it's...
Didn't they win in Adelaide?
Will the Webster just pass him the ball?
Huge concern. But I tipped this Adelaide team to come last, and I believe it to my core, and I think that they drop this game. I got to do it.
Okay. Sydney.
Melbourne, Sydney. I want to go first.
You want to go first. Okay. Okay.
I'm tipping the upset. I'm going Sydney. I think that Melbourne struggled to score against Perth. Not so much the last game they played, but certainly the one before it. This Sydney Kings defense is online with that or in step with the Wildcats defensively. DJ Vasiljevic's confidence is sky high. I think he had a bit of an off game. He comes back. And then Casper Ware, he's not overthinking scoring with Martin out. He's going to score, and he's had a couple of good games. So I'm picking Sydney on the upset.
You know the good thing about recording a podcast twice? You can change your tips. And nobody, so
it's a small little positive. Why not? Yes, yeah. Every cloud is a silver lining. I suppose that's why.
So I'm flipping. I'm going Melbourne United.
Why?
I just think Jock Landale's unstoppable. You've got Barber.
I mean, if Mooney had the game he had against Sydney, why wouldn't Jock Landale?
Yeah, yeah. And then you've got Barber, who will probably do a pretty good job of locking up, or at least restricting Casper.
He goes to DJ. I don't know. It's been
Either or, really. He can do the job. And then I just think Melbourne United will just have too many options, whereas Sydney's offense has got to run through three guys.
Yeah, fair enough. Southeast Melbourne and Illawarra. I want to give you a little piece here. Southeast Melbourne have gone win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, you know, win, then drop, win, then drop.
Yep.
They obviously dropped one against Adelaide. Is that their second loss in a row, though? No, they won against...
Yeah, they beat Perth.
Beat Perth, they lost Adelaide. So they are scheduled for a win. Well, I think they break the streak, so I'm picking Illawarra, but who you got?
Yeah, I'm going Illawarra too. I just can't trust Southeast Melbourne. Who knows? They might turn up and blitz Illawarra and just destroy them. But just as likely, they won't.
Are they the hardest team to tip this year? Or is it Cairns?
I think they are. Cairns, yeah, good point. Cairns as well. But no, I think Southeast Melbourne are really a Jekyll and Hyde team. And they have
beaten Perth while also losing to Adelaide. And getting pretty close to New Zealand, if I'm not mistaken. Oh, maybe not. No, actually, no. No, scrap that.
It's impossible.
They're not that bad.
Impossible to predict. So you're allowed to get the Phoenix games wrong in your tipping. It's a total pass.
Like last week, they played Perth twice, and we tipped him to win one, lose one, and he just had to get the order right. Like, this is a team that's just, there's no consistency week to week. Brisbane, Cairns, last game of the round.
Well,
round two of the NBL Cup.
And I think Cairns will get this by the virtue of them playing all four quarters.
Yeah, that's like exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
I've got a rather biting line here written when I gave my tips on this one. It will be a close game till the end, until the Marnus and the Bullets flow off the plate and into the bin like the soggy, uneaten baked beans that they are. You ever seen baked beans getting slowly, because they're a non-Neutronian liquid, slowly just fucking,
disgusting.
Just sliding their way off the plate. That's a bit harsh. Yeah.
Is Lamanis the most overrated coach in the league at the moment?
Wow, this question was not posed to me in the original recording. Overrated? I mean, because when you talk about overrated, remember, you got to talk about the perception of guys. There's a growing thing of he gets close but doesn't close. And, you know, we saw fourth place finishes in the World Cup and Olympics. We see this team play three quarters pretty well and then die in the fourth. You know, the record is what it is. I'm not saying anything that's, out there.
He strikes
me as... I'm not really stressing an opinion. I'm more stating exactly what's happened in his past. So, but you asked me a question, yes or no, is he overrated? Oh, if I had to give yes or no, I'd say I would actually say no. I think because there's actually a bit of talk whipping up around him of being like, are we sure about him?
Yeah. He strikes me as the kind of guy that needs a really good squad to be able to run his offensive sets effectively and to maximize its potential. I don't think that he can have an average team with a couple of better players and make the thing work consistently. If you look at him...
Like a Rob Beveridge might, for example.
Yeah, yeah, sort of, yep, making...
Joe Wright.
Yep, yep. Like making the best of a bad
Adam
situation.
Adam Ford is doing that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. But Lemanis, he did well with the Boomers. Didn't quite succeed, but he did really well with them.
Yeah, did admirably, yeah. Absolutely.
Played an attractive brand of basketball because he had a bunch of really highly skilled players to implement it. And I think anytime you don't have that high IQ, high skill player, I just wonder whether his system falls apart.
Well, I think with the flow offense, the equal opportunity sort of stuff, like the criticism of that is obviously the Bulls were very popular, or Phil Jackson was very successful with the triangle. He had Jordan, had Shaq, Kobe. And the criticism of him was that the triangle works really well, but what happens when it doesn't? What happens when it can, you know, you just can't make the right read, or it just doesn't happen? And which happens routinely or quite often, you've got to have that one major scorer who, you know, when the shot clock's at six, can just, you know, take over the offense. And Jordan was that guy, and Kobe Bryant was that guy, and Shaq was that guy.
Yeah.
So he doesn't really seem to have that there. Law's quite a good little player, but they seem to get bogged down a bit when it's not in either Law or Sobey's hands, basically doing, you know, pick and rolls from the top.
Yeah.
And that's Mike Dunleavy Senior, the coach, saying that about the triangle. So, yeah, pretty good basketball mind. But, yeah, I think that you can see them get stuck. And that's the thing where they have this equal opportunity offense that we go three quarters, but then in the fourth where it's like you need a little bit more focus. Your focus needs to come into a pinpoint.
Yep.
And things like that they can sometimes – well, the fourth quarters speak for themselves. That's my diagnosis of their fourth quarter problems. If anyone's got a better one, I'd love to hear it. Well, let's go on to the round of games. And we're looking at the results, but also – the questions that come from those games going forward, the major sort of season-long questions coming out of them.
Yeah, there's so many games. We've tried not to delve into each of them with too much detail because it's just overwhelming.
Yeah. Yeah. Cairns and Illawarra was the first one. The first dot point I've got here, Deng Adel, 1.0 of 15. My question to you, Andrew Canyon, is he just not it? Is he just not a star local like, you know, we thought people thought he was going to be?
No, you throw that game in the bin. That game just is an aberration. Bad things happen sometimes, and then it gets in your head and you start overthinking it and you end up playing worse as a result of that. So I think you just go, that was rubbish. What do you do with rubbish? You throw it in the bin and you don't think about it again.
I agree. I think he's a good player. He hasn't shown that to this point, but I get shades of Xavier Cooks from last season. Coming off a bit of an injury, coming off a heavy year, NBA and stuff, but mainly that injury, the shot's not quite under him. And when you're a wing player and the shot's not there, it just makes everything that little bit harder. So I'm high on Cooks for that reason, with that sort of asterisk, and I'm the same way with Deng Adel. I think he's a good player. I have a question, though, going the other team, Cairns Taipans. Andrew Canyon, RJ Hampton. Played 15 games in NBL 20. LaMelo Ball played 12. Mojave King has already played 8. Will he eclipse either of those two in games played?
so harsh. I think he will.
I mean, unwell in the last game. I'm afraid I don't buy that for a second.
Yeah, Bryce Cotton was unwell, but he still managed to turn up. I don't think he was necessarily unwell. I think he will. I think he'll get over those marks because he's certainly not going to be in high demand. He's not going to need to protect himself from injuries for the draft. Mm. He needs court time to reset and show.
But does he get in the game? I mean,
yeah, he might get some.
Is there a place for him at Cairns? I don't think there's even. I mean, the problem is Cairns. Is there going to be a lot of garbage time at Cairns? They're close in every game they're in, and he's just not.
It doesn't make sense that he would have gone to Cairns. I think there's other teams where he might have fit better. I'm sure Sydney, for instance, with all their injury issues at the moment, would be happy to have a player like him.
They've already got a player like him, an underachieving next star guard. So they don't need another one. I think if you were looking at his team, if you were his management, and you were looking at the Cairns Taipans. Why would they choose the Cairns Taipans? And it's a question you just posed, but. They were last season, if you looked at it, they're a team that is number one and most importantly, contending for wins. They don't have a lot of minutes up for someone to develop. And then secondly, Mike Kelly was a coach who showed himself to routinely play as starters 30 plus minutes. I mean, Mirko Jerich was often in the 30s. That's the exact spot you're looking for. So
yeah.
You break down, you know, there's 80 minutes in the backcourt and Machado and and Jarek getting, you know, 60 to 70 of those minutes. You know, what did you think was going to happen? This is just a bad career move. I'm shocked. His management is Lighthouse Sports. I just think this is a bad mistake. Can he get out of it, though? Can he renege on the deal and go somewhere else? I think that's in his best interest to just leave the NBL, go to the G League or somewhere he can play, anywhere.
I don't know. Who'd take him? Will the G League take him? I don't know. So. It's just, but I
don't
whatever
know. Don't you have to get drafted into the G League? I don't know.
I don't know. But what I can say is that his stock has diminished hugely.
Yeah, it has. He's dropped out. He was originally in the top 20. Now he's out of the top 100.
It's amazing.
ESPN's draft board. I mean, when you're talking about getting drafted, like, you only get one shot at being drafted. It's not like you go, oh, I didn't make it this year. It's all right, I'll renominate next year. No. Yeah. Once you're eligible, that's it. And the difference between being a first and second round pick is massive. And the difference between being a second round pick and not drafted at all is a chasm the size of the Mariana Trench. So he's got to be very careful. Yep. And they got to move sooner rather than later in his career.
He's got to take some responsibility as well, because when he has been given court time, he's not performed. You know, so...
I'm going to fight you on that one, Andrew, because I think Giddy's had room to make some mistakes, miss some shots, and the minutes are still guaranteed for him. Yeah. Marvin King has not had that assurance. You know, it's confidence comes from role definition and knowing, like, all right, even if I fail, they're not just going to turn their back on me. And I feel like it's very mutual. The, you know, Marvin King hasn't played great, but also the Cairns stipends are like, we didn't have a spot for you. I just think this is a bad move for him to go to this team, and one that shouldn't be too surprising. I think you could see the writing on the wall. Yes, they lost DJ Newball, and there was presumably a bit of time coming through, but no one's sitting there going like, all right, we've lost DJ Newball, but we've got Marve King. We've filled the gap. I don't think that was right. I think that was a mistake. Hey, Majuk Deng's gone down injured. Maybe there's some room there.
That's a good point.
I still don't see it.
He's going to get minutes now, isn't he? Because
I think the relationship is damaged. I think when you bruise an 18-year-old's confidence, that is, you know, it needs more than an ice pack to fix that, is what I'm getting at. Happy to move on?
Yep.
Melbourne Perth, big game here. I did the press conference after this one.
Yep.
Cotton on a bad night. This is a stat I want to throw at you, and then I'll get your thoughts. Cotton has a bad night, quote unquote. He has 20 field goal attempts. He has 29 points, top of the game. On a bad night, Cotton shoots 20 times. On a good night for Landau, who's, I don't know if his percentages in front of me, but they were high, he shoots 11 field goal attempts. He is 22nd in the league in field goal attempts per game. So you've got everyone's top scorer on a team, then everyone's second option on a team, and then him at 22. Now, he does get doubled a lot, but my question is, what did you think about this game, and in particular Landau's place within it?
Yeah, well, first of all, this game was fun to watch. It was a really competitive battle, really enjoyable game. Landau, he needs to be the focal point of United. They need to identify him as the starting point of their offense, and then they can play off of him. So if he gets doubled, fine, pass it out. Let him be the gravity that collapses the defense, and then he can find shooters or create plays from there. They don't seem willing to truly hand the keys to him in that way. I feel like they've still got Hobson, they've still got McCarron, and it's like who's the top dog, and they're still figuring that out, it seems.
And the Wildcats made it so obvious with Cotton. Even on a down night where he was shooting poorly, they were still like, nope, we're playing through this guy, and he's going to take our shots. Whereas Melbourne United, do they have that? I think they have that confidence in Landau, but they just don't seem to – it's just not their philosophy or their style, which is maybe, you know, a little bit more egalitarian, and you pat yourself on the back. But, I mean, they lost this game, and I think that was the primary reason why. Another thing from the press conference, because I asked Landau the question about that and he gave his answer, and it's a very good one. You can watch the press conferences. But I want to talk about – we were talking about the Kings before and how they have a very player-centric, insular kind of mindset. And when I asked Cotton and Gleeson about Jesse Wagstaff missing that layup at the end, right?
He's 0 for 2 on buzzer-beating layups this season.
I know. And I said to him, I said, did you have a laugh about that, considering, you know, like – he had that horrible blunder against South East Melbourne. Was there a bit of a tension release? And Cotton was like, nope. He was a bit curt with me, actually.
He was, yes.
He was a bit curt. And that's fine. That's his answer. I get it. But Trevor Gleeson, and this is where we talk about player-centric mindset. Gleeson's answer was, I'm just glad the ball got in bounds. Because that's the type of coach he is. He puts players in their best position. He doesn't care about what people think about that. He runs his flex offense, which is considered a little dated. He doesn't care because that's what's going to work for that team, and that's why they're so successful. And when you look at the Kings in comparison, a bit more of a player-centric, like, oh, whereas Gleeson's like, nope, I do what I have to do and I get out of the way. It's about these guys doing the job once the ball's inbounded. And I think that's a difference in the two.
Yeah. And speaking of guys doing the jobs once they're on the court, what was like Bryce Cotton, brilliant three-point shot with that over an outstretched hand to basically secure the game. But then Scotty Hobson had two opportunities to hit basket down the other end of the court.
I'm glad you mentioned Scotty Hobson. And I posed the question to Dean Vickerman. They were down two. They went for two three-point shots in a row with Hobson.
Yep.
And he said he didn't have a problem with it. I don't really either. They had an open look. They were both good looks. Hobson's a proven player. I didn't see an issue with it. Did you?
Well, sort of. We had a Patreon comment on this sort of topic, didn't we?
I'll read it out here. So Ben Van Leeuwen, one of our patrons, thank you for signing up, Ben. He goes, hey, guys, which is an all-inclusive term, which is good. Talk about a make or miss league. One import makes shots while the other has two open game winners. Hopefully Hobson can play into form with 20-plus games to go. What are our thoughts? Thank you, Ben. Okay, he's also written, cool. Let's just hope United haven't ballsed up their import choices 2 years in a row. And he poses a good point. This is now year two of imports coming to Melbourne United specifically and not getting off. I mean,
high quality imports as well.
Who are, we would say, score first. Mella Trimble is who I'm referring to.
Yep.
I mean, he had that horrific shooting stretch with United. Yep. Terrible. Not too dissimilar from Hobson. So we have the same similar player, a little bit different, but similar. Similar in the same situation with the same outcome. Mm. Is this on Hobson? Is this on United? It's obviously a combination of both, but where do you put it, Andrew?
I think it's got to be the way that United structure their offense. I think both Trimble and Hobson are probably guys that are used to having the ball in their hands, feeling the leather, getting used to it, being able to control the offense from their position a fair bit. That's where Hobson was great last year with New Zealand. There was a lot of, he was controlling a lot of their offense last season. This year, he's just part of a bit more of a motion offense, equal opportunity, passing, your dribble handoffs,
I agree with that. However, on those last two plays, they were wide open three-point shots. They were on Hobson. There was nothing wrong with
that. Yeah,
yeah. They were in his wheelhouse.
And that, to me, is where a guy, he's not in his best mental position to be shooting those game winners because he's not had the chance over a series of games to play himself into a position where he feels he can make that shot. So there's an element of doubt. He's probably thinking, oh, I've been playing not that well. There's a lot going on between the years as you take those shots. I'm not sure whether the way that he's been playing, he should have been the one potentially nominated to shoot those. Look, maybe the second one is kind of,
I mean, ball, down two, you would have thought you would have thought Landale sees that ball down two. He'd drawn a lot of fouls to that point. I think he drew as many as Cotton. I mean, Cotton seemed to be live at the foul line. Landale drew the same number of fouls and shot the same number of free throws, I think. I don't know the stats in front of me.
Yep.
You would have thought that ball goes to Landale.
They seem determined to get the three and the win. And I'm thinking, why not get the two in the overtime? Mm. And I would have backed Melbourne into winning overtime.
Now, we were saying about Landau, he was saying in his reply to the press conference, he said, when I don't get double teamed, it'll be a party. And he does draw a lot of commanded double team attention. And our thought is, keep that, use that double team, get him the touch, and then you can, you've got defenses scrambling to recover. I think, what I'm suggesting is he should touch the ball pretty much on every play.
Yeah, I think he should. And I think if he's waiting for the day that he's not double teamed, he's going to be waiting a long time. Yeah, so
old and grey before the day comes, especially in the NBL anyway. Yeah.
Yep. So get used to it, mate, and be that gravity, create the collapsing positions and find the open shooters or the cutting lanes. Where are the cutters? Could Hobson not have put it into Landau and then
cut to
the basket and use his athleticism.
And also, like I've said this before in the past, but everyone's critical of the NBL referees. Well, test them. If you think they're bad and they're whistle heavy, test them at the hoop with the game on the line.
Yeah.
They don't want to do that. Yeah. One thing I'll say about this team, the pen is mightier than the sword. I think it's becoming obvious to me. I don't know if anyone else is picking up on it, but United have kept their second import spot open. And to me, that is an insurance against what the Wildcats are going to do when Cotton naturalizes. And the article came out by Craig O'Donoghue, and I want to say the West, and maybe News.com.
Yeah.
That's going to happen. And when it does, Melbourne will readjust to Perth. And I think that's, I think it's a sound strategy, but it's also, do you get a sense of worry from Melbourne where they're the sort of, they're waiting to see what their opponent is going to do before they make the move?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of, I assume they have the budget to sign another import. They have the roster spot. So, yeah, they would be willing to spend money, especially on a short-term deal. So, yeah, they're waiting to see how it plays out.
Do you think that's Plumlee? Like, if let's say Perth signed Plumlee.
Yep.
Do Melbourne United, what would be their response?
I think it should be Plumlee. Because I think he works well enough in the structure. The Wildcats have already lost Majuk as their backup center. So they're thin up front. Yeah, you could make the argument that a stretch four sort of might help.
Yeah, what do you worry more about? The bigger rebounding problem or sort of the interior and sort of bounce on the front line from Perth?
Yeah, I just think
I worry more about a second scorer. And I know Mooney's that guy, but just that wing scoring a little bit more off the dribble.
Yeah,
Bryce's workload is through the roof.
It's phenomenal. But I sort of think that if you get Plumlee, he's an athletic big, so you immediately gain in rim protection. And you allow Mooney to play at that power forward spot. He sort of adopts more of the Nick Kay mentality. Starting to see that he's got that 3-point range. He can stretch out a little bit more. He's money from a mid range. I think, and then having those two big guys just opens the court for and gives Blanchfield and Steindl a bit more time rather than having to run off so many screens.
And Plumlee's a big screen setter. Maybe that reduces the Cotton workload. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can see an argument. I can see a strong argument for a bit more of a scorer. And I know DJ Kennedy is not that type of scorer, but that type of player who can give you a bit on the boards, plays good defense, and can give you a little bit of scoring. But I don't know if DJ Kennedy's that guy, but something straddling a Plumlee / a wing. I don't know. It's a tougher decision than you think for the
Wildcats. I think, and the little that I know of the Wildcats, I think they'll be looking strongly at character. They don't want to upset the apple cart. So they know Plumlee. They know that he's not going
to be
an issue. Not a high management sort of high maintenance guy. So I think that's probably where they'd like to go.
Let's jump on to the next one. Southeast Melbourne, Brisbane. The top point I've got here is, before we do that, now when I posed that question to Jock Landau about the 20 field goal attempts, I think my question got lost on the stats angle. Like I was sort of saying like, you need to score more of the stats or the numbers. And listen, there's this analytical debate versus eye test debate. I get that. And players, I think, are very negative or critical or skeptical of analytics because they do show a person's worth. Like it was much easier for an agent or a player to go, I'm actually a really good player. I know the numbers don't quite pan out, but I do this, this, and this. And if you haven't got the advanced stats to kind of cut through that sort of BS in a way, it can be a bit mindful. But when I talk about stats, and Andrew's already heard this spiel, but I'm doing it again. A lot of players diminish the role of stats and analytics in the game, saying, never portray the eye test. Well, here's what I have to say about that. And I agree with that to a degree. However, there was an Austrian physicist who was sitting on a tram traveling backwards away from a clock. And he noticed that the further and faster he went away from the clock, the less the hands on the clock appeared to be moving. He then went home and devised an equation that worked out the relationship between time and space. He wrote down this mathematical equation. I'm talking about Einstein here. And with that theory, you can, using maths, work out how the universe works and creates. He was able to work out how space operates, a place that he had never been, nor had any human being at the time of his life or death had ever been. That's what analytics can do. They can work out how the universe started. If they can work out how the universe started, I think they can work out how good or bad a basketball player is. He's heard this before. I did that off the cuff last time. It's, Southeast Melbourne, Brisbane.
You don't get that in any other basketball podcast, people. You don't get that sort of analysis.
E equals MC squared, okay? And it's what, analytics it's, equal quite good.
It's what initially attracted me to the NBL podcast way back when. It was the cerebral approach to the game.
Shut up. You hang up. Kadee to the bench. Southeast Melbourne, Brisbane. Kadee started on the bench. Krebs to the starting lineup. We both like Krebs.
Yeah, we do. I think he's got a big future ahead of him.
Jessup Light. You know, not quite the shooter, not quite the body, but yep. Good player. We like him.
Yep.
I got a stat for you, Andrew Kane. I think you'll like it. Southeast Melbourne, I think either two coming into this Brisbane game or including this Brisbane game, they were 2-7 in first quarters. So they won 2 first quarters. They lost 7.
So slow.
Question. Change that starting lineup. Question mark. Do they need to do it?
They do, and they will when our friend Ryan Brokoff enters the arena. And then they'll change it up. And
I really like the fit when he drops in, because that way, obviously, Glidden or Turangi goes to the bench. You'd be leaning probably towards Turangi
probably
doing
Turangi.
That.
Yep, I think so.
And that means they split games, or maybe Glidden plays 25, Turangi plays 15. Now, whether he regresses in a role like that, that's the iffy thing. But that fit becomes a bit better.
Their front line's still a worry, though.
Yeah, this is the big worry. Before we talk about that front line, I just want to say this one stat as well, or ask you this one question. Who's the worst team? Southeast Melbourne in the first quarters or Brisbane Bullets in their fourth quarters?
Well, they're both pretty bad in age, but I will say Brisbane in the fourth.
Yeah, agreed.
They literally just don't seem to turn up.
Southeast
Melbourne get behind and then they'll make it into a contest. No, Brisbane just...
Plus, if you're going to not turn up in the first quarter, if you're not going to turn up in a quarter, you'd rather be the first than the fourth. But no, I mean, Brisbane is so tepid in their fourth quarters, it's embarrassing. Yeah. I got another question for you. Now when we talk about Biggs production.
Yeah.
What's a worse sign for either team? Hodgson had like 20 points on 9 of 9 shooting, something ridiculous. Is it worse that Brisbane couldn't capitalize on his production, probably his best ever game, or again, the fact that Southeast Melbourne's front line got beat up? And I'm jumping ahead, but Mooney's beaten up on them in the past. Yeah. Adelaide beat up on them further in the round. What's worse?
I think it's worse. Probably worse for Brisbane. I mean, I've never seen Hodgson play that well ever.
Ever. He was a beast.
He was he had all the drop steps and spin moves. It was so impressive. And he looked engaged. It was really, really good to see. They wasted it, and they weren't even competitive. Like, it was 16-point difference, like just a total waste. At least Southeast Melbourne, they don't have the front line, but they can make it up in the backcourt. They have that potential. So yeah, they're gonna struggle Melbourne against those bigger lineups, but they got through this. So you got to say well done.
I'll say this much: I got another question for you, OJ. Orlando Johnson, is the glove not fitting? Do we must acquit? Is my question. The glove does not fit. You must acquit. Is it time to throw Orlando Johnson in the bin like a pair of bloody isotonal gloves?
Yeah, we don't need him in this league. He's no good. It's time to find somebody better.
You're not still sort of injured could be good, or are you just sort of, even if he is injured, time's money?
Yeah, like what's he providing that like Tanner Krebs isn't? You know, you could get
good point.
Look, Jeremy Kendall will be off contract soon. You can go pick him up. You know,
oh dear. Who's in bigger trouble? Orlando Johnson, OJ, or Lamanis? I feel like Lamanis is sort of morphing into the Nicole Brown Simpson in this situation.
I think they should both be in trouble. But look, we know Orlando.
Johnson. They were both in trouble.
But Lamanis, yeah. Teflon.
We talked about this. Yeah.
Teflon.
Nothing sticks.
Nothing sticks. He gets away with it. Just somehow keeps on keeping on, and he You know, he's got,
because he doesn't engage. We've done press conferences with him. He does not engage. He won't have any chicanery. Is that the word?
Chicanery.
Chicanery. Won't have any chicanery or chicanery. Either one. He won't have any riff raff rascals asking him questions about rotations.
No,
won't have it. It doesn't engage.
It's about the feel for the game.
And I think that's his secret. I actually love the way he answers questions, because what he does is he'll ask a question. He'll leave a pause for about 5 seconds just to make sure that all the energy comes out of the room, and then he'll answer the question. And it's a strategy. I'm not saying he's a boring guy. It's a strategy just to return to calm, return to neutral. It's also a bit of a power play. Like Trump has the handshake. He pulls you in. Lemanis has got the draw a big breath, suck in like vampire of the energy, and then he gives his breath. Let's jump on. Sydney, Adelaide, do we care about this game? Do we want to talk about it?
I don't really care about it. I'm a bit sick of Adelaide. They got thumped.
Oh, we've had a steady diet of them. Here's another thing, though. Sydney hit their magic number of 90 points and win. I know that betrayed them against Perth, but I think that's a different set of circumstances. But against most of the teams in the league, they're going to hold teams to around 80, and if they can score 90 themselves, it's a magic number for them.
Yeah, I'm just thinking if there's anything else that jumped out from that game. I think this was one of the ones I kind of only half watched, because I just Adelaide. It's hard to get excited for Adelaide. I know they've got Josh Giddey, and I'm meant to be really pumped for that, but he had a shocker in this one.
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
It just, there wasn't a whole lot to love, other than Casper Ware bouncing back, really showing some consistent form now.
And did it back to back when they played Perth, which we'll talk about. But I want to say this with the 36ers, and we picked them for last, and I think we even used the word lock. We were like, they're a lock.
Yep.
Because we thought Humphreys was a bit of a handcuff contract with Giddey. That just hasn't been the case at all. Happy to wear that one. But here's my problem with them now. Starting the momentum of losing. I know they beat South East Melbourne. I can't believe how they did. I don't know how they did that, but they did. But there does feel like this momentum of not losing, but malcontent, discontent, a little bit of like, I feel a storm. A storm is brewing.
Yes.
And my big question is, can an 18-year-old who's never played pro hold back the avalanche of what I feel is losing momentum that's coming, and also hold back the momentum of players, older players looking around like, I have to stat to get my next job. You got like the likes of Crocker, this new import coming in. If he comes in with a mindset of, I want to score as many points, or, you know, I want to just get good stats or look like the best to then get my next job. Cause you know, that's a legitimate worry for a player like, who is it? Paul? Coming in. So, and Giddey's really the on-court defense against that.
Yeah.
And if LaMelo Ball couldn't do it, stop that avalanche of losing, I don't see how Josh Giddey's going to do it.
Look, wins cover sins. So while they're winning, they'll be okay and they'll get through it. But as soon as you start, they get a few losses stacking up, you just watch this team. I think there's an implosion awaiting.
Illawarra and the New Zealand Breakers, unless you've got something to add on that game.
You don't.
Illawarra, New Zealand. This game was interesting. This was the worst effort of the round. This is the worst game. Like, Illawarra just absolutely beat up on this team. This is a real beat down, drag out. This is a curb stomping, okay? That's what it is.
Yeah. Jessup just hitting step backs, and he's incredible.
Yeah.
And New Zealand,
have they given up?
Have they given up? They look disinterested, don't they? You got the two Websters seem to have found a happy medium where they basically don't play on the court at the same time as one another.
I did notice that. Bit of a staggering.
Yeah. Colton Iverson continuing to – he rebounded well in this game, but he can't make a layup.
Yep.
So, no. So put a fork in him.
Tell me this, Andrew. Like, diagnose their problems. Is it more – create a pie chart here. Personnel, strategy, or the COVID struggle? I want to talk to you about that. Like, what percentage would you give to their personnel's the problem, strategy, COVID?
I think maybe 60% personnel.
Mm-hmm.
About 30% COVID and 10% strategy, coaching, that kind of thing. They got the horses. But
are you sure about that? I worry. Is Abercrombie having a down year because he's gotten older? Or is he having a down year because of circumstance? That's a big question for me. I still don't know the answer to it. Maybe you do.
Yeah, I don't really know. He is getting older. But I think for him, it's probably a more circumstance. I think he's got a family at home. He's got young kids. That would be trying times.
I don't want to sound callous about this, the Breakers situation, because I think I speak for both of us when I say we really sympathize. It's not an ideal situation. However,
like
a lot of teams are in a similar situation now. And as much as it's like, you know, the Breakers don't know when they're going home, honestly, in this climate, nobody knows. The uncertainty is, you know, I mean, look at Perth. They had to scoot over to Melbourne quickly. They got into lockdown. You know, nothing's guaranteed for any of these teams. It's worse for the Breakers. I'm not denying that, but it's still bad across the league.
I'm old enough that I remember when the Australian cricket team would go over and tour England, and they'd be gone for 2 months or what have you, two or three months. And the team rules were that you don't have girlfriends on the tour or anything like that. It was just the boys are away. I'll see you in 3 months' time.
But here's the thing as well. The timing on this is what throws me off, because the Breakers, they were saying, oh, there's a bit of a challenge coming in. And then once the losses started to pile up, it was like, this is actually too much. Now, I'm not saying they're excuse-making, but the timing is a little bit like, oh, well, did the losing make the COVID situation worse, or did the COVID situation make the losing worse? I agree with you on this one. I think more than half of their problems are personnel.
Yeah.
Patterson's out of shape, and I've got a stat for you. If Patterson's out of shape, Colton Iverson's not up to it. Maybe Abercrombie's regressed. That's probably a bit hard to say. Delaney's not a part of things like he was. I got a stat for you that I think is going to sum it all up. Ty Webster and Corey Webster are first and eighth in what statistical category?
Now, I guess this right the first time around. I hope I guess it right.
Honestly, gin hand on heart, he did.
It was usage rate.
Usage rate. Corey and Ty Webster are the only two teammates in the top 10. There's a couple kind of close to that. There's two, you know, in the top 15, but as far as top 10, it's only those two in usage rate.
Yep.
Also, they're the only not those two, but New Zealand are dead last in what stat category?
Assists.
Per game, by quite a long way. Andrew guessed both of those right the first time. I think it's pretty, as much as I'm congratulating Andrew on getting it right, I think also you're probably going to guess.
Nobody could have guessed it. That's my basketball genius showing through.
And they're actually last by a little bit as well, like two whole assists, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's like they're on 13 and then the second bottom is 15 and then it builds from there. It's not a good look about Brisbane. Happy to move on.
Yep, Melbourne Cairns.
The early season import struggles for United continue. Hobson, 8 points, 4 of 12. My second line. We'll talk about the positives first. McCarron and Barber combined for 17 points in the fourth, just the fourth quarter. They won this game. Those two.
They were so good. Mitch McCarron's just like. He
five
gives you
steals.
Gives you
five
whatever you need.
Steals. Yeah.
Oh, you need a steal? Yeah, have one. Oh, you need me to hit a crucial 3-point bucket? Sure, no worries. And I'll do it without being noticed, without
Here
being flashy. He's like the anti Goulding.
You didn't say that last time.
I didn't.
No.
I didn't. That's immaterial. No,
that was a low blow. That came out of nowhere. That was a good one. I think I did this last time. I'm going to do it again. Mitch McCarron is the NBL's answer to Dennis Irwin. You didn't know who Dennis Irwin was last time. He was a winger for Manchester United. Roy Keane's favourite player. They were both Irish. Maybe that has a lot to do with the reason why Keane liked him so much. But are you ready for this impression again?
Oh, bring it. Yeah.
Are you fucking? This is what Roy Keane would always say about Dennis Irwin. He'd say, oh, you know, great player, you know, get your goal, trained hard, never injured, you know, do what needed to be done. That was Roy Keane, and he would say that about Dennis Irwin, and he still says about Dennis Irwin at any chance you can. If you're an EPL fan, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Your impression the first time around was so much better. I'm a bit...
You know...
On that one.
I'm tired. My voice is sore. We've been doing My first impression was great. You know what I might do? I might cut out the impression from the first one, because my side of the audio was recorded, and put that over the top. And if I'm going to do that edit, I'll do it right now. Do you want to hear a silly impression? He goes, Dennis Irwin, always on the wing, always a good player. Get your goal if you need it. Never injured. Always trains hard. You know, that is Mitch McCarron. Coming back, Landau's stat line. I just want to go through this and then I'll give you the floor. Landau, 18 points, 58% from the field, 11 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 blocks. It's a great stat line. But again, where's that? Where's the Mooney game that we're going to talk about in a second? Where's the 30 and 20? He's more than capable of it. And it's just, it's not like they need it from him, but maybe they do in the finals.
Yeah, yeah. Enough of this sharing the ball around and making sure everybody gets their turn. Like, feed the big guy down low. Let him have a big one.
We talked about this. Anything you want to say about Cairns in this one? Like, they really, fatigue was an issue. We didn't talk about it, but fatigue seemed, they just ran out of legs in the end. I don't know. Or maybe they got ran over. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Kwotanoi was excellent. He had a really good game, but then he tapered off. Yeah, sort of did his work a bit early. Machado, you know, it looked like he was running himself into form in the previous game, and then this one sort of didn't have the same influence. He still, you know, 14 and 9 assists. It was not bad, but didn't feel as influential as sometimes he can be. Just the same old Cairns Taipan story, isn't it? It's just a bit of inconsistency. They were hammered. Well, I mean, this was the game where Majuk Dang got injured, so that would have taken some steam out of them.
Yeah, fair enough.
I think this was, yeah, this was his injury game.
Mahabi King was healthy for this game, though. Still didn't see the floor.
No. And if he doesn't get bumped into the rotation now, God, goodness
gracious. Tell me this. Did Melbourne United walk over this team, or did Cairns run out of steam?
I think Cairns did run out of steam, but I think on balance you'd have to say Melbourne are better. So
I think Melbourne definitely. I thought McCarron did enough against Machado. I really, sounds a bit daft because Melbourne are the top team, but I think like Melbourne have really got Cairns' number.
I mean, Cairns, I'm just, you know, you look at this, I'm looking at this, just checking the scoring development chart, you know, and Cairns had this, had the lead throughout the entire game. Just that fourth quarter, it turned around. But
it's that depth, Oh, what we want to talk about here is Barber. What happens when this team, when Chris Golding returns? You know, this Barber McCarron matchup is fantastic, right?
Yep.
This depth,
havoc.
Oh well, you know, and now Golding's going to come back. Illy's going to come back. All vying for the same 80 minutes, or let's say 120, if you want to throw that.
Yeah.
Does Hobson go to the bench? Does Barber go to the bench? Does Golding come off the bench like he did two seasons ago? Fun to watch.
This is the question we had right at the beginning of the season. I think we said there's only one ball and there's so many, you know, it's a 40-minute game.
There's only five spots on the court. Yeah. Like, that's the thing. Like, Melbourne have spread their money out over eight players when the Perth Wildcats have put it into two.
Yep.
We'll talk about them in a second. But that is going to be very interesting with Golding. And also, like, does he come back and from a soft tissue injury and return straight to the starting lineup and still have it?
Mm.
If he doesn't have it, is Vickerman willing to, like, pull him down? Like, that is
going to be interesting.
For a big player in the league, and we like Chris Golding, a big player on there, it's going to be really interesting to watch. I'm happy to move on.
Yep. We got the Sydney Perth game. Game of the round. In terms of the round, enjoyment to watch.
Serious question here, and I did this as a bit of a joke on Twitter. I said, "Oh, you know, Landau's better. Mooney's better than Landau. It's kind of whatever." But it's a conversation. You'd agree? Like, this is a very tough conversation.
It is now, and I've got egg all over my face because I said at the beginning of the season that Mooney wouldn't amount to much, and you know, I was wrong. Like, he's been incredible. He's automatic from mid range. He's showing a 3-point shot now. He hunts rebounds like nobody I've ever seen. You know, pushing his own players out of the way to get those boards. He's an animal, but he seems like the most mild-mannered animal I've ever met.
Yeah, for sure.
Really impressive. I think he's right up there with Landau. Landau, maybe you'd say, has a bit more natural tools.
First of all, a couple of inches taller, a couple of inches longer. The outside shot is, did Mooney. Yeah, I think it's a little bit more reliable on Landau. It's a tough conversation. If you're picking Landau, it's on potential, because if you're picking it on paper, it's Mooney.
Yeah, right now, look at the numbers.
His production is fucking freakish. And he is the second best player on this team. And this is what I liked about the pairing of these two. Cotton plays every second of every minute of every game.
Yep.
John Mooney does the exact same, but a different position. He has that laser focus that... This might get me in trouble, but that laser focus on 100% effort all the time, that is a very American trait. You look at, say, Cam Glidden, like, they come in and out of games. The Americans have that. They focus, man. They can really do it. It's part of their culture, I think. And it's such a big part of basketball. And those two are the pinup boys of it, Cotton and Mooney.
Yep, they work hard.
I got a question for you. Were the Kings dirty?
A little bit. Dan Kickett was quick to raise the elbow.
Yeah. Well, I said this. I said, if Dan Kickett loved playing defense, a lick of defense as much as he liked throwing elbows, he'd be a superstar.
Yeah.
He loves to get them up.
He was super lucky that it was a small crowd and there weren't any Filipinos in the audience, because tell you what, would have been trouble.
Although he probably could have quelled the crowd if he'd then torn up the decals.
Everybody would have been happy.
Piss them off and then win them back over. What was I saying? But dirty. I thought you were saying Sean Bruce. Sean Bruce dirty.
Yeah, Sean Bruce had a couple of cheapies.
Dirty player, yeah. Not a dirty player full stop, but he was dirty in this one. Absolutely.
He doesn't need to do that. He played really well last year, Sean Bruce. Mm. He hasn't shown that again this year. Like, focus on your own game, man.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought. Make a few more shots, a few less cheap shots, more actual shots. And okay. We'll talk. I thought that was
But the play between Casper Ware and Bryce Cotton, I didn't notice any cheap shots in that. I just thought that was old fashioned. Duel.
That was fair.
Yeah,
that was fair.
I loved it.
The instigators of the cheap shots were Sean Bruce. Who else was cheap shotting a little bit? I'd kick it on occasion, and then there was one more, but I'm forgetting now. But the good players for Sydney, DJ Vasiljevic, Casper, they were straight up. But I think that was the direction as well. It'd be interesting to see Adam Ford. I think he would have been pretty keen. I think he would have preached it, like, we're going to knock him out. Well, they preached it in the finals last year. Yeah. We're going to smack Cotton around. We're going to play after the whistle. We're going to be a bit dirty. I think that was their strategy. Great game as a result.
Yeah. I think Jared Bairstow for the Wildcats, sneaky good defender and really good value for money player.
How many teams could use him right now?
He's impressed me. Like, just
Southeast Melbourne would kill for that guy.
Yeah. Yep. He'd be getting big minutes for them. Yeah, so, for sure.
About Mooney, had a great stat line, and the conversation Landau and Mooney, it's come up. However, I just want to make sure this game for Mooney came against Jordan Hunter, who was in foul trouble, Craig Moller, who's undersized, and Daniel Kickett, who doesn't play defense. So just a wincy bit of a, like, instead of a full stop, Mooney, full stop, it's a comma, so there's something after it, you know. Happy to move on.
Yep.
Adelaide, South East Melbourne. I have my first dot point here. Sunday Dech killed Sykes and Adnam. Adnam and Sykes combined for 18 points. Not bad. Six of 20. Now, Dech obviously didn't have both of them the whole time, but when he went to either one, it was just like, it was clamps.
Yeah, he's so good. He deserves more minutes.
Defensive player of the year? Question mark?
Well, I think Humphreys might be fighting him for that one.
I'll ask you this question then. Is the defensive player of the year, could it possibly come from any other team?
The only other team maybe could be Illawarra with Justin Simon, but I haven't seen it from him in the last couple of games, so he's sort of fallen off the pace a little bit at the moment.
He's coming off the bench now. Like, his role's kind of slowly changing as they go a bit more offensive with Jessup.
Yeah.
You would put – if I gave you odds and said the defensive player of the year will come out of Adelaide,
yep.
I don't even know odds. I can't be bothered thinking it out. But
I'd take that. Yeah, I would agree.
Sports bet. Let's create a line. Big issues. Humphreys and DJ combined for 51 points. I got to ask you, does Dane Penaud's return solve that problem in your eyes?
It'll definitely help, but you're having Dane Penaud returning after a year of absence. He's not a beefy big guy. He's got a knack for being in the right place at the right time.
I'll ask you this question.
Yeah.
If you could change Brokoff into a big of a similar ilk, let's say it's Brian Brokoff, he just happens to be a big, do you think they'd be better if they're bringing in someone like that or bringing in him?
Nah, I think they're good with Brokoff because he is tall. He's like 6'9" or something. Yeah. So he'll be able to rebound well enough.
I still think the bigger problem with this team is the inconsistency of the wings.
Yeah.
I think Dane Penaud does clog up that just enough. I think it frees up because I think Dane Penaud frees up Wetzel and Moore, who are a little bit, well, Wetzel's young, but Ben Moore's a little bit out of position. It just frees them up to just not have quite so much of the burden which they're kind of cracking under. Like, I think once that, it's like Ben Moore and Wetzel are carrying a piano, all of a sudden when the third guy comes in, it's like, oh, okay, now this, what looked like an insurmountable problem is now becoming quite possible.
You know, the best thing about getting Brokoff into the game as well? What's that? Cam Glidden to the bench, man.
Well, he'll probably still start, we agree, but then, it staggers those minutes of trying.
Cam Glidden. I'm giving out a new award in the NBL, the most frustrating player award.
Oh, yeah.
Going to Cam Glidden.
Are there any other candidates?
No, I don't think there is.
Majuk Deng, are you frustrated? No. We have to come up with a
Todd
candidate.
Blanchfield. Todd Blanchfield.
Okay, great answer. Yeah, good answer.
But yeah, he draws towards the end of this game. It's tight. He does a really smart veteran player, draws an offensive foul, you know, as they're trying to inbound the ball. It's like, brilliant, Cam Glidden. Well done. Well done. You've created an opportunity for your team. And then he takes that opportunity. He's got a pretty good open look at the three. Of course, because it's Cam Glidden, he misses it. Game over. He is so infuriating. It just pains me to watch him play. Because that was just a microcosm of Cam Glidden.
Yeah, I know. Draws that savvy charge, and I couldn't have put it any better. Frustrating. There's nothing else to add. I want to say this, though, and this will end on this. This team is inconsistent. Win, loss, win, loss, win, loss. How much of this falls on Coach Simon Mitchell?
Yeah,
inconsistency is a coach killer. It's week-to-week inconsistency. It's like it shows you've got talent, but it's not catching up. What do you think?
Yeah, I really like Simon Mitchell, so I feel I just like him too much to really pay out on him, which is not really sensible, is it? He needs to tighten the leash a little bit, I think. I think he's letting these guys have a lot of opportunities, and they're letting him down. And at what point do you say enough's enough?
Yeah, I look after myself here. Yeah, good way to put it.
And I think Brokoff, I mean, hopefully Brokoff comes in and does what we expect him to do, because that will be the release valve for them, and he can reduce the minutes allocation to Glidden and Tarangi. And
I'll say this much. One frustrating thing is Adam Gibson out hurt. He's missed the whole year. Has he played a game? I think he played one or two. No, he's gone.
No, he's doing the Damian Martin for this year, isn't he?
He's having the Damian Martin. I'll take your money, but I'm not going to plow your driveway. You know, I'll play, but I'm not going to play. That's frustrating. But I mean, South East Melbourne, who's their best player at the moment?
Mitch Craig.
Kyle Adnam.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, it's Mitch. Of course it's Mitch Craig.
Yeah, sorry.
Kyle Adnam. No. Kyle Adnam was, it was Ziv, it was Kyle Adnam in that game. On major plays, was getting a lot of shots. Mitch Creek, to Mitch Creek. Now, maybe he needed a couple of long shots on the play, and that's not his style, but still, we talked about it with Landau. Give the guy the ball. Yep. Give it to Creek. Make it happen.
Mitch Creek, he hit all those threes to bring them right back into that game.
Yeah, right.
And then he wasn't really sighted again after that. Certainly didn't try and launch another three, which seems crazy to me. I think if you've hit that many, throw up another one.
And it's like, this team is his. Like, I enjoy living by Mitch Creek, and I don't mind dying by Mitch Creek.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Even if it's not the percentage play for him, like, it's, we go back to Cotton. He was having a bad game, but the Wildcats were still like, no, we are Cotton and the Cottoneers, and that's how we play, and that's the way it's always going to be. Remove the doubt, remove the questions. Just be a bit more cynical. Not even the word. Be more direct. Just be honest with yourself about who you are.
Yep.
And when Brokoff arrives, it's their team. If you're going at the rack, it's Creek, and if you're going from the outside, it's Brokoff.
Yeah.
End of conversation.
Yep.
It's not Adnam anymore. It's not, or it's maybe Sykes. Yeah, Sykes, I'll wear. But if it's Sykes with Sunday Detch standing in front of him, or Mitch Creek with Crocker in front of him,
it's going. Yeah.
Come on. Grow up. Yep. Well, unless you've got anything else, I'm done.
Mate, we've done a lot of talk today.
Oh, jeez. My throat is exhausted. I think I'm going to clip up my Roy Keane impression and also my Albert Einstein story. I think I told it better the first time.
Yeah, I think so too. This has been an epic. I'm really hopeful that when we click stop, it saves it.
Tell me about it. Thank you much. Thank you very much, everyone. Patreon, Booktopia, marvelous.
Buy a book. That quickly. Yes.
I have 7 copies left. It's $30. It's $60 if you buy an online secondhand copy. It's a really good handbook on the league. I'm not going to say any more. And once they're gone, I don't want to sell any more of these. All love to Boddy and Brett Maher. I don't want these things in my house.
help.
Get your copy.
Help brother out. Come on.
Yeah.
Buy it from Joe. Thank you very
much. Last word from Andrew.
Buy the book.